This is Rebecca Lowe, or Rebecca Lua, if you listen to Suboptimal Radio, and you are listening to Men in Blazers on the NBC Sports Network.
It's unbelievable!
Noel Gallagher and Oasis broke through with their debut album, Definitely Maybe, in 1994, the same year as the United States played host to the World Cup. Though both feel like they happened only yesterday, 21 years have since passed, and in that time, Noel's gone from being a roadie on the Manchester music scene to global superstardom, from humble working-class roots to British pop royalty. Throughout that evolution, Noel's remained steadfastly devoted to Manchester City, a team who've experienced their own radical transformation, metamorphosising from self-sabotaging, happy-go-lucky local punchbag to Premier League title winners and aspiring European power. We've long admired the times we've heard Noel talk football, whether he was marking the club's move from Main Road to the Etihad by making a short film for the BBC, or sitting down with Mario Balotelli for a lengthy and remarkably human interview. So when he came to New York City to release his latest album with Noel Gallagher's High Flying Birds, we jumped at the chance to have him come into the panic room, sit down and just talk football. The role it plays in his life, his biography as a City fan, and his personal experience of this year's less than optimal title defence.
The man behind us, Rog, a singer-songwriter responsible for some of the most popular songs of the last 20 years. But before he belted out hits like Don't Look Back in Anger in front of sold-out stadiums, he sang in support of his beloved Manchester City from the terraces at Main Road. That, America, is where Man City used to play before the Etihad. He's here on tour in support of his new album, Chasing Yesterday. Ladies and gentlemen, we welcome to the Panic Room, formerly of Oasis, presently of Noel Gallagher's High Flying Birds, but always a City fan, Noel Gallagher. Welcome.
Thank you very much.
To the Panic Room. It's great to have you here.
It's an absolute honour to be slightly overwhelmed.
Well, welcome to the home of Manchester City's bastard off child, New York City FC.
Yeah. I can't wait to go and see them.
But before they'd be honoured to have you, they'll let you sing the national anthem before the game, though.
I've got season tickets.
Before we get to the football, I've got to ask you about your new album, Chasing Yesterday, which you produced as well as performed. I read a great quote from you about that producer-performer conundrum. You said, Noel Gallagher, the producer, thinks Noel Gallagher, the musician's a lazy bastard. He must try harder. He must dig deeper. He must go to the well. Noel Gallagher, the musician, thinks Noel Gallagher, the producer, is a genius. He tries his best, but some things are beyond him. Is producing your own stuff, is that the closest you get to being like the player manager?
Yeah, I guess that's a good analogy. The main difference between producing your own record is when you're kind of doing an album with a professional producer, you will sit and play a track, and you both do that thing where you sit and stare at the speakers, and the producer will sit and listen to it, and he'll turn around and he'll say, yeah, I think that bit there, that bit that goes into that bit, we really need to work on that bit. That's not quite right. And you go, oh, okay then. But when you're producing it yourself, you sit and listen to a track that you've done and you just go, I'm a genius.
Well, it's like being Mourinho, like watching his own work every single week. Yeah. It's very, very true. Yeah. So, born and raised in Manchester.
Indeed.
Rog, born and raised in Liverpool, born and raised in London. We talk a lot about the North-South divide. We try and explain the difference between North and South a lot. Mm. What for you is the essential difference between North and South? Do you feel the divide?
The weather.
The weather.
The weather is the main difference.
I often say that the sky, when I've been to the North, the sky has seemed closer to the ground in the North.
It's colder up North. The people up North dress better. The new mob down South. We have better shoes, that's for sure. It's a bit more free and easy up North. Because the North doesn't have a bona fide capital, everything down South is geared towards London.
Yeah. People are much nicer up North, there's no doubt about it.
Yeah, I think that this people are just a bit looser up North. That's where all the great bands come from.
To me, you're a quote machine. I mean, you are able to hold court on music, life, politics, culture, family. And you've got a black belt in backhanded compliments to me. To me, that is that when I read interviews of you, if I was asked to define Manchester, I'd say that is 100% Manchester.
Oh, well, thank you very much. I don't know what to say about that. But, yeah, backhanded compliments. Are there any other kind of compliments?
You're the master. You are the master. We should talk about football.
Yeah,
the floodlights.
Well, we talk about that we learn everything we know about love, we learn from football. In fact, we know that we love football. Like, other forms of love are harder for us to access as Englishmen.
It's the only time you feel human emotion.
What role does football play in your life?
I agree. Like, my wife has said to me a few times, "You're dead on the inside until it's about the football." Then I've seen you kind of wipe. You know, when City won the league, when Aguero scored the goal I was in a bar
in Chile
right, at 10 o'clock in the morning, but and there's footage of me crying. She said, "That's the only time even when our kids were born, you were like, there's another one. Nice one. Welcome." But you know,
you started watching football. You started watching City long before Kun Aguero was even born. City were happy-go-lucky. They were They were the masters of self-sabotage. I mean, you were a kid from a tough part of the city, probably fighting a bit on the terraces as a regular back in those days. You first went in 1971. You came of age there at Main Road in the 80s. Can you tell us what was life like growing up on the terraces before the English Premier League in the 1980s?
It was all standing, for starters. And Americans won't understand what that actually means. It's the throng of 16,000 people in a stand. It's kind of live, and it's, you know, you're kind of wherever you're standing is not where you finish up when there's a goal scored. You finish up over there somewhere.
It's that drift, that amazing
human
drift.
And because Britain in the 80s was quite a desolate place, and particularly the north, and you'll know this being the northwest as well, football was all we had. There was no, clearly there was no internet, there was no gadgets, there was no television, wasn't great, fashion wasn't great, anything like that. Football was everything. It was part of the community. There wasn't the foreign players that there are now. You know, you could go and watch City, and like 8 of the 11 players would be from Manchester, from near the ground. The same for Man United as well. And it was all we had. And you lived it better than us, because like in Liverpool, Everton won the league a couple of times, and
big days in Rodgers' life.
Yeah, they are though. Sepia tinge
memories. I gotta say.
Are. I mean, I remember when you know, American guys would come to England in the when I was touring with Inspired Carpet, you'd meet American fans, they'd come over. They couldn't really understand. You could say to them that football is a religion, but they would never understand how important it actually is, you know, to that city.
Did you travel with City on the road? Because that was where it became important, where the north had nothing.
Did I go and see them away?
I remember going down south. It was the only mark you had of making your mark south with your team.
Man City played Stoke on New Year's Day sometime in the 80s, and there was for some reason, there was a rail strike, and we walked.
Well, it was
we
England,
walked
mainly,
most of the way. We walked to Knutsford Services, and jumped in the back of a van of some guy called Stan. I don't know who he was. And dropped us at. We slept in the train station. Went to see City get beat 3-1, and kind of jibbed on a coach and got home that night.
Somewhere in Hollywood right now, someone is firing up a film called The Walk to Stoke. It'd be an amazing screen.
It occurs to me, you talked about fashion earlier, but it just occurred to me when you said that about standing in the terraces, that fashion played such a large part the development of fashion in the 80s. It might not have done it if people were sitting down. It was part of the standing up experience that made that happen.
There was, you know, this is before mobile phones. So if you lost your friends, Man City stand that went along the side of the pitch called the Kippax. It was the longest and biggest stand in England. It held 16 or 20 odd thousand. I can't remember what it was. If you lost your friends during the goal celebration, that was it. You'd never find them again.
Take years.
Yeah, it would take the rest of the game. And when I first went there, where the stand ended, there was like a wall that went all the way down. It was only about this wide, and it's where their dads used to put all their sons. and they'd go off and get drunk at the get a drink. And that's when I first remember sitting with all these kids, like squashed on this thing, eating crisps. And when I remember when remember them like singing City songs and looking at all these lads, and I was only 4 or 6 at the time, and thinking, God, that's amazing. And somebody has suggested that that might be where my obsession with an anthem comes from.
Wow.
You know, because my songs
that
were
was
then.
Your, that was your rosebud moment.
Maybe.
While you're eating chips, that's hearing them sing about.
Well, you know, just singing these.
Hearing them sing about Asa Hartford.
Yeah. That's maybe where my obsession with the Terrace Anthem comes from.
Oh, I love it. We should say you've cheered for City. I mean, City went down and down again, but they stayed proud. But you then became superpowered, a story well told through the kind of petro oil millions. How do you feel cheering for this shake-powered City? Does it feel a little bit like being with your wife when she's got a lot of work done?
You know what? You know what? It's because we went so long and went down so deep and low. It's like we earned it. When the Arabs come along, it's like we'd earned it. So it's not like Man United in the 90s was like this huge club that had built it all up. And then they got, the Glazers came in. They were kind of up in arms about it because something was taken out of their club. We had nothing. These guys came along and put it all in there, you know. And I pray and praise the day that those guys came along. You know, it's just the most brilliant thing.
Shane Mansell listens to the pod. But do you prefer football, a little bit of you? Do you prefer football when it was a bit more shabby, a bit more local, a bit simpler?
Not particularly. I like...
Winning.
Well, in the case of being a City supporter, I love it now, clearly, with all the trophies and all that. But as a thing anyway, I love watching... You always want to watch the best players, you know. Yeah. And when you've seen Dennis Bergkamp and Henry and Aguero and...
King Clancy.
I mean, not particularly the City players. What I'm saying... great player. But in the league in general, it's great, you know.
Watching Aguero live, I saw him play last year live. One of the most impressive things, just the strength of that little guy. He's just absolutely amazing. He's so physical.
He's great. He's got such a lovely demeanour. I've met him a few times and all he ever says to me is, "It's okay."
It's okay. That's good. That's good. Yeah. That's a good thing to know.
He's got lots of questions.
It's okay. It's not like Manny Pacquiao.
It's okay.
He's just okay. He says, "Oh, wow, I won the league," and it was so great.
It's okay.
It's the most reassuring thing I've ever heard.
We've got lots of questions from our GFOPs. At Boomcracker78, Noel, favourite City player and manager of all time?
I'm going to go with modern ones, I'm afraid, because these are the glory years. My favourite City...
James Milner.
My favourite City player might be... It's either got to be Sergio or Silva, and the manager, Malcolm Allison, was
Malcolm
good.
Google that, man. Malcolm Allison.
Him. Used to have Miss World waiting in the dressing room for him after the games.
That really is. Okay. When you got Miss World, that's what it is. I've got to ask you, You grew up the terraces. You grew up in a very rough part of Manchester. There are thousands of kids watching Manchester City through the decades that you've watched them.
Yeah.
But when City win now in the Emirates, this new kind of powered, muscled team that win leagues, expect to win games, it's your song. It's Roll With It.
Oh, yeah.
I've got to ask you, as a local lad who grew up with nothing, now... is Noel Gallagher. How does it feel when your boyhood football team, their song of victory, is a song that you wrote at the club you supported from the terrace as a kid? Can you describe what that feels like?
You can't describe it. I mean, when City won the league last time, I was on the pitch with the players. Vincent Kompany had just given me his captain's armband in the tunnel and it took us onto the pitch.
Why did he give that to you, do you think?
Because I was... A friend of mine who works for City said, "Do you want to come on and see the players get the trophy?" I said, yeah, go on. So we went. There was some delay, and as we got down, the players were still in the tunnel, and Vinny was there, and he's kind of, "Oh, congratulations, mate." And I just said to him, being a bit cheeky, "Can I have your armband?" And I thought he'd go, "F*** off, what are you talking about?" And he went, "Yeah, go on." And he put it on, and he went, "Yeah, go on then." And then we got on the pitch. And as we got on the pitch, you know, they're doing that, and then the crowd starts singing, you know, what they were singing, like, one of mice, I can't remember which one it was. And I was thinking, it don't get any better than this. You know, my team have just been given the trophy, the captain's armband. There's like 50,000 singing one of your tunes. I mean, you know,
It sounds like the best bar mitzvah of all time. Yeah.
I want to go back to the previous season. You mentioned you were in Chile when they won the title in 2012. Can you describe what it felt? I mean, it's an amazing call. We all remember Martin Tyler's call, watching it on TV over here and in the UK. Aguero, the two goals in injury time.
That's unbelievable.
I mean, 40 years without winning the league title.
So I'm in a bar in Chile at 10 o'clock in the morning with a film crew. We're making a documentary about the tour, which has never come out. And so we're 1-0 up at half time, and it's like, right, let's just get the second half over with. So they get us back to them, we're losing 2-1. I couldn't believe what I was watching. It was open-mouthed. But we knew as soon as we got the first goal back, we'd get the second one. And when the second one went in, it's one of... You still can't put it into words. When I got back to England, 3 days later, I must have watched it a million times on YouTube and just thinking, wow, I can't actually believe that
happened. Tyler said, drink it in. You will never see anything like this ever again in your life watching Premier League football.
And I was crying, you know what I mean? Because, not because we'd won it, just with relief that we managed to nearly throw that away. And then it's easily the greatest moment in Premier League history.
And against Manchester United.
And that just makes it all about it. It's just unbelievable. And... but then, so that night, I'm doing a gig in Chile, and my tour manager would always come in and say, 10 minutes, the show time. She came in and she said, 10 minutes, as we're kind of getting ready. And then she walked in and said, the British ambassador's here. He wants to see you. And I was like, what does he want? She said, I don't know, he's here with a lot of people. Something about, did you win a football game today? And I was like, off. So this guy comes in and he said, oh, on behalf of everybody at the British Embassy, I'd just like to congratulate you
on your
fantastic achievement today. And I was looking at him thinking, is he thanking City on behalf of me? And I'm going, whatever, mate, you know,
great.
It was great. You know, all I did was watch it.
QPR fan.
Yeah. He was a West Ham fan. But brilliant.
Oh, God, even more immense than a night out with Morrissey in Los Angeles, that sounds like. I've got to ask you, before we get to City in the present day.
Yeah, we want to get there.
What do you think of the New York City FC strategy? Do you even know what it is? Seeing Americans run around Yankee Stadium in the sky blue of Manchester City.
Well, you know, starting football clubs from scratch that have never been there before is obviously a very weird thing to do. You know what I mean? There's going to be no culture or history there, so they're starting it from scratch. So really, I don't know what to make of it. And you know, these guys that run our football club are very, very serious about football.
Yeah.
Our chairman Caldoun is very, very serious about making City the biggest brand in world football, and it's a great thing. And you know, you guys on programs like this are trying to spread the word. And if
we're trying to run it into the ground, though.
And if football, you're doing a very good job as well, by the way. And if it ever does take off over here, you know, our mob are going to have, you know...
Well, I must say, the support up there in Yankee Stadium, I've been to 3 of the home games, been absolutely amazing.
Really?
They already had a supporters club, an official, unofficial supporters club, the Third Rail, formed before they played a game, protesting the fact that Lampard didn't come at the beginning of the season.
Yeah, that was a bit of a PR disaster. But what the great thing is like, you know, the rumors going, oh, City are buying a football club in America. And we were like, wow. And then when they said it's New York, the greatest city in America, was just like, that's even better.
Yeah.
Imagine if it was in Houston.
You thought they were going to buy
the Jets.
There's
anything wrong with Houston, by the way. I'm about to go there in a couple of weeks.
Houston City wouldn't have sounded the same as New York
City.
It works. Yeah. It works.
We've got to do it. We've got to do it, I'm afraid. We've got to autopsy the season.
Yeah.
I
know it's painful, but medical science demands that we go all Quincy MD on it. Let me take you back.
Let me take you back in the George right. Michael sports machine. Let's go.
You brought Fernando.
Yeah.
You can do an A. You can go, way. Bakary Sagna. Oh, don't forget Wilfred Cavallero, Bruno Zuccolini. I don't know who that bloke is. No. And, of course, the mighty Mangala.
Yeah.
You started two great wins. You beat Newcastle. You beat Liverpool. Take us back, beginning of the season, defending
August.
Champions.
Bam.
How were we feeling in the Gallagher home about the season ahead?
Before a ball was kicked, I thought we'd finish second. Strictly because Mourinho doesn't go 2 years in any league without winning the league.
So they, you did think it was Chelsea. You thought Chelsea were the threat, not...
With the players that they bought against the players that we bought, they were always going to win it. I think, I thought at the time, that the teams were so evenly matched that the only thing that could split them was the managers. And Mourinho's one of the greatest, as moronic as he is. And Pellegrini, as nice a guy as he is he's a very, very good manager, right? So I thought at the beginning, I thought that we'd finish second. Now, when we clawed the 8-point gap back to New Year's Day, when we finished level with them, I thought, wow, we've got a chance here. You know what I mean? They were playing, they were tending to play the same team every week because he didn't like his squad. And then, for whatever reason, I don't know whether the players have got complacent or I don't know what's happened. We've had some bad results, but it's starting to feel now like the end of an era. Like the big players are the wrong side of 29 and the noises coming out of the club are there's going to be a few leaving. And
okay, we're going to get there to the end of the season. We're going to go month by month though here. Before we get there, I want to go to September.
We got you in here to prolong your agony.
I want to hear all of this. But September, you tie 1-1 with Chelsea at home. Who else than Frank Lampard comes on? The English muffin.
Is that what you call him?
Yeah.
The English muffin.
Well, he calls him the English muffin. It's I'm a big Chelsea fan. I'm a big Lampard fan. Right. So he scores against... and he scores for Man City against his old club Chelsea to eke out the 1-1 tie.
Yeah,
what was it like having a Chelsea legend trot out in the sky? First of all, what was it like watching? How did you feel about Lampard when he arrived at City?
I thought it was a good move for the club to get somebody with that much experience. And, of course, when he comes on a substitute against Chelsea, you're thinking, really, is this going to be the story? And, of course, when he scored, I may have swore at the television in words to the effect of, go on, Frank, you absolute diamond.
You City legend.
Yeah.
Has your opinion of him changed since he's been wearing...
Well, all football supporters have got a great lot of respect for Frank because he's a nice guy. He's one of the, if not the highest scoring midfielder in English football history, you know, a brilliant player. He's just
a professional. He's always fit. Yeah. He's always ready to play.
He's not throwing himself around the pitch. He's not a dirty player. He just seems very consistent.
He's professional.
And, yeah. I thought it was a good move. I thought it was a good move for us. Yeah, and all Chelsea supporters still love him.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, that just speaks volumes.
Burnley, you were 2-0 up against them.
Awful.
Two goals they scored late on to force the tie. Losses followed. Liverpool, Palace, Burnley again. How do you understand that period as you lived it? What went wrong?
Man City seem to be this season at their most vulnerable when they go 2-0. The other game against Villa.
It's the most dangerous lead of all time, 2-0.
Because the players, I'm not casting aspersions on the players here. I don't know them personally. You know what I mean? I don't watch them train. But, you know, all those players that were 28, 29, they all got 5-year contracts at the end of last season. So it's all, they're all secure now. And when you're 2-0 up, the game's over. And maybe they are thinking they can do it. And you've got young, hungry teams. City squad is aging. It was kind of snapping around the heels. Yeah. And once City are knocked onto their heels, they find it very difficult now to go the extra yard and, you know, to come back from loot. Like against Sunderland in the League Cup last year where we were down and 1-0 was with half an hour to go and we end up smashing it. I don't think we'd do that again. Yaya has got to go from playing the African Nations and he's not the player. He could never reach those standards again. But there's an end of an era coming, that's for sure.
And then in the middle of all of this, Champions League is going on. Yeah. And, you know, the league so far in the Champions League, have to say, Man City haven't quite found their stride. The new Man City haven't found their stride in that league. Neymar, Messi, Suarez, that performance this year.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. But the thing with us in the Champions League is every game that we play or we've played, bar maybe one or two, has been a semi-final. It's like an opponent you get in a semi-final or a final. It's always Bayern Munich, Real Madrid. We've never had any easy games, and that's because of the seeding and all that. I mean, you know, you look at Chelsea's Champions League fixtures. They don't really start playing until the quarterfinals. They're playing nobody, really.
You know? No, thank God we lost this year, or we wouldn't be winning the league.
You've got to come in the Europa League and visit towns that are only normally frequented by people in the white slave trade or...
Get knocked out by Dynamo Kiev.
Yeah, that's the way to do business. We know Vincent Kompany is a mate of yours. Mm. He's an amazing leader, no doubt. Mm. This season, he's decayed before our eyes. I mean, we've seen tactically averse, whiffing at the ball... Just always out of place. I've not seen someone decline so quickly outside of like Adam Sandler. He's the Premier League. He seems haunted. How do you understand what's happened to him?
Vinny was at his best when he had a regular partner. So when he had Lescott beside him the year we won the league first, it was week in, week out. Neither of them got injured. The year after that, he had Dimitrios pretty much every week. And
that's ponytail Dimitrios, a different player than short haircut Dimitrios.
Well, this is it. Maybe it's the Samson effect. This year, he's had a different partner every week. And added to that, he had a couple of injuries. And, you know, same with Yaya, you can't hit them standards. Year after year after year. Listen, he's not a spent force, trust me. Once Mangala gets settled, I think they'll be great.
Once puberty's really hit Mangala.
Iron off some of the rough edges, that's all. He's not that bad. He's the same. He's not had a regular partner. If him and Kompany played the 20 games in a row...
Communication, understanding.
Playing with. So one of the reasons John Terry's had such a great season is because of Matic out there in front of him. And it gives him a lot of protection.
Well, this is it. He's had a great season because Chelsea defend deep. And he's had Matic in front of him. He had a bad season the season before because they were playing that high line and he was getting exposed.
Yeah, they're midfielder. They're on our space. No space to see the
Mourinho's
defensive midfield.
This is what makes Mourinho a great manager. He's gone in there and he's gone, how do I get the best out of John Terry? It's almost not playing him on the halfway line.
Yeah.
That's nonsense. He's playing him on the edge of the 18-yard box.
Yeah, playing him as a striker most weeks as well. So Joe Hart, here's a player we probably love. We obsess. Before we go into any Man City game, we spend a lot of time looking at the clips from the tunnel because Joe Hart's behaviour in the tunnel becomes more and more bizarre week after week after week.
What about his hair, though?
Oh, my word. Well, that's a whole thing. And then the moustache. He sported the German moustache like halfway through the season
the
as well.
In the tunnel, he's like Tony Montana in that last scene of Scarface. He's just like,
we want goals, lads! We want goals! Yeah. How do you view him? Because he's capable of amazing goalkeeping performances.
He's a good
still.
Lad. I think he tries too hard. Do you know, like, when he gets... If a corner comes in and he gets the ball...
Yeah.
He runs around for 5 seconds trying to just be busy with it.
Yeah.
But it's like most keepers just get it.
Conserve energy.
Just go, okay, everybody get out of the box. He's running around constantly. You're going to throw this too. It's just like, calm down.
The way you describe him, he sounds like the Premier League's Gary Boozy. Leadership is that an issue with City. At times, big times, when they've gone a goal down and you expect on other teams there'll be someone who'll step up. Mm. I mean, Yaya Touré, as you said, came back from the African Nations Cup. He's won his trophy. Season's over. At times, it seemed like he couldn't be arsed.
Yeah, I mean, you know, these players, Kompany and Yaya, they're that great. They're judged by their own standards.
Yeah.
And when they set those standards
it's
so
a really
high,
good point.
Where Vinny for 18 months was the best defender in the world, Yaya last season was the best attacking midfielder in the world, and once you set those standards and you fall below them, you're going to get judged against them. You must point out, it's their own standards, you know what I mean? They will know more than anybody else, you know what I mean? And you can't be brilliant, particularly at that age. It's not like they're 24, 25 and they're developing. Last year they were at their absolute peak and maybe this is them just turning the corner a little bit.
We should talk also about Pellegrini. You've got the charisma of Jose Mourinho. And you've got a bloke who looks like he's perpetually ferreting for a cigarette that he's dropped somewhere in the dugout. He's the most corpsey looking manager in the Premier League.
He looks like Father Ted, remember that?
Yeah, absolutely. Old BBC sitcom.
What do you think of Pellegrini?
I like him. I think he was brilliant when he came in after Mancini. It settled. Look, if you come into a league that you've never been before and you win two trophies and he never got enough respect for that. You know, they give Manager of the Year to some, they gave it to some Tony Pulis or something, you know what I mean?
Pulis for City.
I think Pellegrini is a very, very good manager. But Mourinho, when you're up against Mourinho, you've got to be better than that.
What is tactically the critics have talked about in those sort of games against Burnley, against Hull, against Palace, playing two holding midfielders when it feels like they can overwhelm them? Is that something you've noticed this season or something you ascribe to? Or
Pellegrini's like Wenger in a way. He plays how he plays and that's the end
system.
Of it. And
that's what
it.
He does.
He's very stubborn. And you've got to accept that. When he came in and he changed that system, well, Mancini had, and he started playing that with two up front.
Yeah.
And we were all going, it's the greatest thing we've ever seen. Do you know what I mean? And we've scored like, you know, 200 goals in the first, you know. So you can't just be that flippant with the guy. Do you know what I mean? That's the way he plays. And if that's not required anymore, then they'll get somebody else. But he seems like a very stubborn, set in his ways guy.
You've gone through Hughes. We've gone through Mancini, mm-hmm. Pellegrini, kind of somewhat of a dead man walking. Pep Guardiola always talked about like a unicorn that's always going to jump over the rainbow and save the day.
Klopp's out there.
Who do you think about?
Ancelotti's going to be out there.
Who do you think about as the gentleman that is going to be the man who's going to save the team?
Right. Well, I think if Pellegrini stays this summer, then we can safely assume that somebody's tapped Guardiola up. Because I don't think that there's any way that City would leave a summer of Ancelotti and Klopp floating around world football and not at least go for them.
In order to wait for Guardiola.
So if Pellegrini stays and they don't give him a load of money, we can safely assume that Guardiola might be on his way. Huh. If he stays and they give him a load of money, I would be amazed. But I think the rumours won't go away about Guardiola. Me personally, if it ain't going to be Guardiola, I'd have either Klopp or Ancelotti. Mm-hmm. Either one. And I think it does feel like it's time for a change, even though I do love Pellegrini.
Hate to talk about the Manchester derby.
Which one?
Most recent one.
Yeah, well, what happened?
Couldn't the whole rivalry thing just be solved by you and Mick Hucknall pistols at door?
Easily. Yeah, I reckon I've got better eyesight than him. So,
what's it been like watching United vaguely, I would say, resurrect themselves under Van Gaal?
I think it's the emperor's new clothes there. I still think we'll finish second. We were due a hiding. You know, what was... What was shocking was the way that we went in front and let it go. But, you know, Van Gaal, again, seems tactically more aware than Pellegrini, you know what I mean? But I don't rate Man United.
We've talked about United now, we've talked about Mourinho. Got to ask you, Liverpool Football Club, you've got a complicated relationship with that city, my city.
I love it.
You're on Match of the Day.
Yeah.
You talked about, you got a beautiful name for Brendan Rodgers.
The Brodge.
The Brodge.
Oh, we love the Brodge. We use it all the time.
You said they were then on their 13-game winning streak. You said, we thought the powers of the Brodge were waning, but he's turning it around. They're winning games without Stevie G. We need to keep United at the top four as City fans. Has the Brodge let you down?
The Brodge has failed me. the Brodge's powers. And we thought the Brodge's powers had come back.
We thought they were
Clearly they'd waned. He's another one. He's got a big rebuilding job there. He's bought a lot of crap there. So there's a lot of players going out of there. But I still rate him as a manager though. Somehow I think, you know, to get that team on a 13-match unbeaten run. Anyway, in the first place, without Sturridge, I think he's proved himself. Even though he's not won a trophy and he won't get in the top four, I think in a weird kind of way he's proved himself this season to be a good manager.
Two quick questions. You're touring America for the next couple of weeks. You've talked about touring. You've said it's like an extended stag do. You've talked about how it's a bit different when you're... you said it's not. It's on a tour bus 6 weeks in America. It's fine when you're young. I'm almost 50. What does 47-year-old Noel think of 24-year-old Noel?
And what does 24-year-old Noel think of 47-year-old Noel?
24-year-old NG... if you would meet me today, would think he's achieved everything that I'm hoping to. So respect, Granddad. And then I would my 47-year-old would look at my 24-year-old and just think, okay, you need to sort your hair out for starters. Right. Also, need to stop wearing big baggy clothes because you look like you're in someone else's clothes. But I wish I had your wild abandon.
Oh, it's very much like producer, musician Noel Gallagher having Indeed. That conversation. And last question from a listener at Serenity Night says, as he pads around his palace in the UAE, do you imagine...
I don't have a palace in the UAE, by the way.
Do you imagine Sheikh Mansour listens to Oasis?
Yeah.
We'll say Sheikh Mansour does listen to Oasis. If we were to ask you what he needs to do to fix City, what would you tell him?
The Sheikh.
He watches the Sheikh.
Yeah.
What does he need to do?
GFOP.
What does he need to do? He needs to leave it in the hands of the capable people who run the club, Caldoun and the two Spanish guys, Cheeky and whatever the other guy's name is. And he needs to come to some more games because we love him there and we need to pay homage to the man.
Yeah.
That's what he needs to do. He also he needs to book me for one of his games. Birthday party gig.
Yeah, you'd love to go to the UAE. Yeah, go do one of those parties.
Put it out there now.
He does bar mitzvah, Sheikh.
Yeah, I only do it for 5 million a song.
Yep.
Have as many songs as you like.
Email us, we'll hook you up.
You know, he also he needs to come to Manchester. He doesn't need to come to Manchester. Well, you can do whatever you want, Sheikh. But he needs to go to Manchester and say, can I meet that Noel Gallagher for
us? Yeah.
You can work together on this backhanded compliment.
Noel, thank you so much for that. We really appreciate everybody. Click around the rest of NBCSports.com.
Best album
ever.
This
is the album. Go online, find out all about it.
Noel's top five.
Download it. Go and see the tour. See anything you can. Lots of other content on NBCSports.com. None of it as good as NG talking about Manchester City.